Let's start a podcast about our mental health. For no good reason why, let's call it Fine Cake.
Howdy, everybody, and welcome to another slice of Mind Cake.
Mind Cake?
There he is, with him,
Lee Crompton, and him,
Paul Beeson. Hello, mate.
Hello. That was almost seamless, but you threw me there with the howdy.
I'll edit out the massive pause that you took while you were giggling.
Well, and I had a mouthful of tea.
How are you doing?
I am doing very well, thank you. It's been a bit of a roller coaster, as always. It all seems to be a bit of a roller coaster. Seems a while since we've done this, Paul, because I think we were early with the one with Russell.
That's true. Yeah, we did that quite a while ago now, didn't we?
As it's been pointed out to me as well, our first male guest in 10 episodes.
That's right, yeah.
Not by design.
We just know more brilliant women than men.
Just the way the mind cake crumbles.
That's right.
So, yeah, since we last spoke, much has happened, which we could probably get into post-waffle after the meat of the sandwich. And this week's meat of the sandwich is you.
I am the meat.
You are the meat. Before we get into that, I should probably ask how you are. Any pains in your neck?
No, I've got a pain in my back, though.
What could that be from, I wonder?
Yeah, I have started a new little side hustle, delivering expensive and large Persian rugs to people. I'm helping out a friend of mine, has a company that cleans and repairs really high-end rugs, and they're a driver down. So he got in touch and he went, do you want a little bit of extra cash between acting jobs? And I went, yeah, of course, that sounds great. So I've kind of just been helping the guys out doing that. Yeah, some of these rugs are enormous and heavy and my back is in real pain from lifting these massive rugs.
Yeah, I mean, from what you've told me, it sounds quite back-breaking that they're big, heavy rugs. And when you first told me, I thought you were winding me up. There's a company that cleans expensive high-end Persian rugs. That's do they do anything else? That's all they do.
Well, they repair rugs as well.
Persian rugs or any rugs?
Any rugs, really. But I mean, like, some of these rugs are so expensive, like when they're cleaned, they're probably hand washed and hand brushed and left out to dry on the special things, and it's quite a specialized process. It's not just like whacking a Hoover over it or shaking back or something.
But to be fair, from what you've said, and I can't say too much, I guess, but from what you've told me, I've bought cars for less money than what it costs to get some of these rugs cleaned.
Yeah. And without going into sort of too much detail about what people are spending on getting them cleaned, but the value of some of the rugs themselves are well into the tens of thousands. I'm delivering these rugs. The rugs are worth more than the car I'm delivering them in.
I love the idea that you're bestowed this heirloom, I presume, in some cases, to you.
Yeah, well, not me personally, but yeah, to the company.
Yeah, but you are the handler, if you like.
I am.
You're the rug whisperer.
I like that.
And the other thing I was going to say as well, a bit like we have discussed this off air, you know, like Cornish pasties have to be made in Cornwall. I think Persia is now Iran. So does the rug, to qualify as a bona fide Persian rug, have to have been made in Persia?
Persia is current day Iran.
Yes.
So you were right. Yes.
I did that level geography.
Yeah. I'm assuming to be a sort of a proper Persian rug, it would have to come from that part of the world.
Or is it that because they're not part of the EU, they don't have these rules where, you know, Cornish pasties have to be from Cornwall?
I don't know. I'm just a delivery boy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll just deliver the rugs.
Yeah, but other than that, I'm doing all right.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we get into the meat that is Paul Beeson.
Yeah. For those of you that have been with us since the beginning.
Well, is there anybody left?
Hopefully. But if you've been here since the beginning, you'll know that pretty early on in the run of episodes that we did, one of the very early ones we did was Lee's story.
Hello.
Mr. Lee Crompton, folks. And at the same time, so that was the first day that we actually got together to record our first ever podcast, wasn't it? We did your story.
Such happy memories.
And once we did that, we then recorded my story. but it's not been put out until now.
Well, because you're a
So
man, we've got embargo on that we have having men on the show, even if they're the
that's
host.
right. Even if they're 50% of Mindcake, we are sort of taking a little dip back into the not too distant past. So you'll get to hear the poor recording quality and the fridge buzzing in the
Fraser will
background.
be back.
The freezer is making another appearance.
Yes, that's what the punters want.
That is what the punters want. So, yes, without further ado, here is my story.
So today we're going to talk about me for a
You.
little bit.
Yes. Where do you want
And
to start?
I will take you back through the mists of time to the tail end of 2016. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm an actor and a writer, theatre maker, dream weaver, many strings to my bow,
Sex symbol.
sex symbol. But for a large number of years, for 10 years, I was a teacher. I was a drama teacher. And in 2016, so I might jump about in time actually, thinking about it,
I don't think it
but
could be any more meandering than mine, so it's fine.
okay. So late 2016, I was working at a school which will remain nameless. I didn't really know it at the time, but I was not in a very good place mentally. It soon become apparent that I wasn't in the best place mentally, but I wasn't aware at the time. So the school I was working in was quite high tariff. There was a lot of behavioural issues. In my opinion, the school wasn't run particularly well at the time, which had its own issues. So my working day was quite stressful, I would say. Even though teaching drama was a lot of fun, all the other behavioural issues that came with that were quite difficult to handle. Now, some people thrive in that sort of environment. Like some teachers are born to be in that kind of environment. I don't think I'm one of them. I worked in the private sector for a long time. Now, obviously, kids in the private sector, who are privately educated, when they are young people, they are still going to have behavioural issues and stuff like that. Just because they're having their education paid for doesn't mean that they're suddenly all brilliantly behaved. However, the school that I worked in for a long period of time was fantastic. But it got to the point where I'd kind of gone as far as I could go in that school. I just thought, it's time for a change. Sometimes you just need a change. And even though I was sad to leave that particular school, I felt at the time it was right for a change. About a month into my new job, I was applying for my old job back at the other
Oh,
school,
really?
but to no avail, the school decided they wanted to go in a different direction. So I couldn't even get my old job back, so I was stuck in this school and I wasn't particularly happy. But I do what you do. You
This
just
is a still a public school.
this is now
Not,
a
sorry,
this,
but
this is a state
a state
school I'm in now.
school.
So I've moved from the private sector into the state sector. And it couldn't have been more different. So it was a bit of a rude awakening for me because my teaching style had become, I suppose, quite comfortable being in that nice school for 8 years, I think it was. So then I had to sort of reassess my whole practice because I couldn't be that teacher in this place. So I stuck it out. I'd been there just shy of a year, I think it was, or maybe just over a year, and I was falsely accused of assault by a pupil.
I didn't know this.
So we're going back. So this was a pupil who was in second year of high school. I don't know if you remember the bottle flipping craze that was happening around sort of 2016. Young people would have like plastic bottles of water that had a quarter of the water still in it. And the aim was to flip the bottle up in the air and get it to land
On its
on its
bottom.
bottom so it was standing up. So kids all over the school were just flipping bottles everywhere, and it used to drive teachers insane, right? So if you were a teacher around the bottle flipping craze, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Maybe even if you were a parent around that time, you might have some sort of inkling. Because you can't stop kids having bottles of water because kids need
Drink.
to drink and be hydrated. Anyway, so this lad was flipping a bottle in class, which you're not allowed to do, obviously. So I asked him to put his bottle away politely. He refused. He kept flipping his bottle. I asked him more firmly to put the bottle away. He refused, so he kept flipping the bottle. So I thought, right, okay, And I did a little circuit in the classroom, like I was checking on the other kids who were working in groups and stuff.
Yeah.
And he had his back to me and he was flipping the bottle. And I snuck up, sort of behind him,
mm-hmm.
and he flipped the bottle into the air.
Did you catch it?
And I caught it in midair. Like, you didn't see it coming because it was behind him. It was like, whoosh, like a ninja. And he looked up at me and I was like, you'll get that back at the end, son. And I strutted over at my desk, like, you know.
The cat that got the cream.
Absolutely. Mm. Put the bottle on his on my desk, and he turned round to me and went, you just assaulted me. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Hang on, so there's other people in the class?
Oh yeah, it was a full class. Yeah. It was like 20 kids.
Right, okay.
And he goes, you just assaulted me. I said, no, I didn't. He goes, ah, you did. And he brought up something. I'm not going to go into details here because I don't think it's fair, but there'd been another incident around about the same time in the school where a teacher had been accused of assault.
Right, okay.
Falsely, again, mm-hmm. I might add.
Mm-hmm.
And he made reference to that previous incident.
Uh-huh.
Now, because that incident hadn't been properly addressed or dealt with, or the pupil in question hadn't been reprimanded for said incident,
yeah.
He then, I think, maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but he sort of went, oh, hold on, no, that happened before.
And
that's similar. It wasn't. I'm not going to go down that road. But anyway, so that just gives you a bit of context. So he brought that up. And I was like, that's incredibly inappropriate.
Mm.
You can't talk like that. I said, go and stand outside in the corridor and I'll come and speak to you, you know, because you're disrupting my lesson.
Mm.
And he left the classroom. By this time, everybody stopped, you know. And I'm like, it's fine. Everybody just get back on with your work. Just let that pupil cool down outside and I'll go and speak to him in a minute. You carry on. So anyway, class gets back to normal. I pop out to speak to this pupil and he's gone.
Right.
So he's just done a runner
somewhere.
So I sort of follow protocol and I phone the deputy head teacher who's on duty and I'm saying this pupil is roaming the corridor somewhere, so if you see him, it's because I sent him out and he's decided to leg it. So that's fine. So still in this class, and then the deputy knocks on my door and takes me out into the corridor and goes, so we tracked that pupil down, but he's saying that you hit him, so we have to investigate this. So I'm obviously taken aback, but I also, I appreciate that they've got a job to do because you can't just take, you know, it's a serious allegation.
Yeah.
But I hadn't done anything wrong. So I was like, absolutely, investigate away.
Mm.
I have nothing to hide. What do you need? She goes, well, I want to speak to some people who were there at the time. So,
who are now presumably in the same lesson.
Yeah, I'm still teaching them. Uh-huh. So she, this deputy interviews, you know, a couple of pupils and I wasn't there, but they must have said, oh yeah, Mr. Beeson didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
So then she goes, right, I'll go away and speak to him again and blah, blah, blah. So then later that day, she comes back and she says, so he basically broke down and admitted that he'd made the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just before the Christmas holidays. And she's like, so we'll just draw a line under it. And I was a bit like, well, you can't just draw a line under it.
Uh-huh.
He threatened my career there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't just let him get away with that. Anyway, so the following week, so this is like the day before the holidays actually begin,
mm-hmm.
that class come back, and said pupil strolls in, like nothing's happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, obviously nothing's been said.
Uh-huh.
And he sat there like this. Now, if you're listening, you won't be able to see what I'm doing. But he was resting his head on his hands with his middle fingers up on each side.
Yeah.
So it looks, you know, to the casual glance that he's just leaning on his hands like that, paying attention, but he's actually giving me the finger.
Mm. Twice.
Yeah. So it's that situation where you're like, you know, pick your battles. If I accuse him of swearing at me, he's just going to deny it, and we're going to get into a whole thing.
Yeah.
So the lesson happened. To be fair, he didn't really do much good or bad in that lesson, and it was fine. But then at the end of it, I was like, he's won.
Mm-hmm.
He's just defeated me. And I was just
and there's nothing you can do.
And there's nothing I can do about it.
Mm.
You know, at the very least he should have been given a detention or some sort of punishment to say it's not okay to just accuse teachers of assault because you think it's a laugh or whatever. Because obviously they don't realise the actual ramifications that can have to you professionally and personally as a person who's in care of young people. So then after the Christmas holidays, I was absolutely dreading going back to work. And I got in my car to drive to work, and I sat there and I was like, I can't go into work. I can't do it. And I started to cry. So this was like, you know, the first week of January, sitting in my car. I was waiting for my car to defrost, just sitting there sobbing in my car, just like, I can't do this. Uh-huh. Can't do this. So I phoned in sick. I basically just said that I wasn't well and I wasn't coming in. And I was like, well, what am I going to do now? So I thought I'll make a doctor's appointment. I've not, you know, been feeling quite low around this time anyway. So I went to the doctor. It was a student doctor.
Right.
So a nice young lady sat there with the sort of actual qualified doctor sitting behind, who's sort of monitoring.
Yeah.
And she goes, so what seems to be the problem? And I was like, I don't know.
Mm.
I was like, I said, I feel stupid for being here, but I feel really low and I feel down and I don't really know why. And I was crying in my car this morning, and this poor lassie who's like, obviously in her, you know, early 20s is just sat there going. So then the other doctor was like, it's fine, I'll take over from here.
Yeah.
And just started to ask me a few questions and ask me about how things were going at work and home and all that kind of stuff. And she asked me a series of questions. And at the end of the questions, she went, you're severely depressed. Like, she went, severely depressed. She goes, you cannot go back to work.
Mm.
You need to not be in that environment. But she's like, you also just need to take some time.
And, yeah, take some time out.
And I was like, depressed?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I maybe thought I was a bit stressed.
Yeah, yeah.
She went through the questions. She was like, luckily, the only one that you didn't answer, you know, like sort of on a scale of 1 to 5, she goes, the only one you didn't answer 5 on was, do you feel like hurting yourself or harming yourself?
Uh-huh.
And she went, that's good.
Mm.
She goes, because you're not at that stage you're having those kind of thoughts. But she goes, everything else that we use as a sort of scale, I can't remember what the sort of questionnaire is called now, but she's like, you are like top of everything. She's like, she's right there, and then she signed me off work. Then I had a bit of time out and I was like, well, what do I do?
Mm.
I was like, you know, it's really nice not to be in work, but at the same time, I'm just kind of sat around. And that's
not
be
seen outside enjoying yourself.
But that's part of the problem, isn't it? Because you kind of go, well, I've been signed off work. I can't just...
Get the fun fair.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know,
which might actually cheer you up.
Well, here we go. But you have that sort of thing. It's like, I don't know, you're trying to justify...
Yeah.
That you're ill. I can't be seen to be doing anything fun or enjoyable.
No, you've got to be sat in the house looking glum.
Yeah, and I've got to, you know, be wrapped up in a blanket or whatever it is.
So how long were you off for?
So I was signed off in the January, so it was 2 months, give or take. It was around that time. So I was signed off for 4 weeks, and then I went back to the doctor, and then it was another 2 weeks, and another 2 weeks. So, something like that, anyway. But I did start to feel better. I started to go out running. I started to train for I signed up to do a half marathon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because one of the things the doctor was saying to me was like, you need to get out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I sort of went back, you know, we were talking, and she was a lovely woman. She was just about to retire as well. It was like, it was her last, I was her last case, almost. But she was like, you know, you need to go out, you need to walk, you need to run, you need to exercise. She goes, that makes you feel better.
Mm.
So me being me, rather than going, I'll just go out for a stroll, I was like, I'm going to run a half marathon. And I got a schedule, and every day I was out running, you know, following the schedule.
Do you like a plan?
I do. When it comes to things like that, when, you know, if someone says, getting some fresh air would make you feel better, and I go, okay, but running a half marathon would make me feel even
really
better.
Good.
You know, get that real sense of achievement. And so I was training to do this half marathon.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like 5 days a week you're out running. So that gave me something to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
So every day at some point I would get my gear on and I would go out and I would run and I would come back. And I did feel good for it. And then I got really into watching Parks and Rec at the time on Netflix. So
yeah.
I was really into that. So I had little things going on. And then a good friend of mine who runs a theatre company and is a director of a theatre company put a thing on Facebook. They were looking for someone to be in this kids show called Shark in the Park. And he's been a very, very good friend of mine. I still work with him now, professionally. So I sent him a little message. I just went, listen, mate. I said, I know I've not been in the game for a while because I've been teaching for so long, but I said, I'm looking for perhaps something new to do. Would you mind if I audition? He was like, no, of course not.
Uh-huh.
I auditioned for Shark in the Park, and they offered me the part. So I went home and straight on the laptop typed out my resignation.
Oh, that was it.
Finito. Sent it off to the school. So that I didn't. After I'd been signed off, I didn't even go back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I need to have a break from teaching. Blah blah blah. Here's my 4 weeks notice. Boom. And I never set foot back in that school.
Wow.
I was meant to go to my first counselling appointment around that time. And then I couldn't do it because I had a Shark in the Park rehearsal. Mm-hmm. So I cancelled it. And I never went to counselling. I then went off on tour doing Shark in the Park. I was on the road for quite a while. And that was like therapy for me. I suddenly felt a million times better because I was doing something fun.
Yeah.
I was travelling about. I was performing in proper theatres and was getting paid to do it, and it wasn't teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from the rehearsal and, you know, setting up the show and taking the show down at the end of the day and moving on somewhere else, that was it. I didn't have any marking, any planning, any stress, any...
Just performing gives you that buzz.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well.
However, what I then came to realise, and it didn't hit me for a few years...
Mm.
That isn't a form of therapy necessarily. It made me feel better.
Mm.
It made me have a new lease of life. It gave me a new focus.
It kicked the can down the road.
It did. And I got fitter because it was quite a physical show. So I was just moving about a bit more, lost weight. I started to feel better about myself. I then started to go to the gym. And, you know, I was in a good physically and I suppose mentally I was in a good place. And then one day out of nowhere, it just hit me again.
Mm.
That low feeling, like I woke up one day and I was like, ugh. But I knew what it was because I recognised it. And I was like, but why? Everything's fine now.
All the plates are spinning fine.
And it was like, well, no, it's not, because you didn't deal with anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you replaced a shit situation with a better situation, but you haven't actually processed anything.
Uh-huh.
It's like we were talking about your experiences and not having the chance to process things, or then when you're having to process things, it's so overwhelming. It's like, that's when it gets you.
Uh-huh.
And me just kind of ignoring it, you know, it then sort of came back. I was like, all right, so it wasn't just my job.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, well, what now? But then luckily for me, it passed. Like after a day or two feeling a bit low, it sort of dissipated. And that's how I basically carried on. Things would be fine. I'd have a couple of low days where you're just like, I'm just down and I don't know why, or I can't pinpoint why, but I know it's going to pass. So you just battle through it, or you just, you know, deal with it the best you can, and then you start to feel better. Then it's like you come out of it.
Yeah.
Then COVID happened, and basically a year's worth of work that I had lined up just stopped overnight.
And you're now self-employed, presumably?
Yes, self-employed. Yeah. So then after COVID, I got another teaching job. Not at the same school, at another private school, boarding school, which is lovely, very illustrious, great kids, great staff. And lo and behold, it hits me again. So I'd been at the school almost just shy of a year. I got signed off again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was. I basically got signed off for a month, and it was the last 4 weeks of the term. So like, I'd almost got to the end of a full year, and I was having horrible headaches, like proper migraines. It would like put me out of action for a day, maybe 2 days. And I've never had migraines before. And it seemed to be being brought on by this sort of stress and anxiety and depression, all this kind of stuff. So then basically I had to get signed off, and then over the summer had to make the decision whether I was going to go back or not, and I decided not to because I was like, I've been here before.
Yeah.
And so then, yeah, so then that happened again. And
so now, talking as recently as...
So this was last summer.
Right.
Summer of 2022.
Yes.
But I, again, being the summer, and I wasn't going back to the school, threw myself into the Edinburgh Fringe, so I had a very busy year. But we were so busy doing stuff, I just, again, just battered through it, and came out at the end of it all. And I was like, oh, I feel like just like as low as I've ever felt again. Basically, the last, I don't know, 6-7 years of my life has just been this roller coaster of like feeling great and doing great stuff to then feeling worthless and low and not being able to cope with everyday life. I was prescribed some medication, which I stuck to for about a week, but it made me feel even worse. I was just lethargic. I was like a zombie. I was like, I would rather be compos mentis,
yeah,
and deal with the depression than be a zombie and feel just, you know, slightly better.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no motivation to do anything. I was like, that's not healthy. So I stopped taking medication. But after that all kind of finished, I've not had a migraine since. 18 months down the line, touch wood.
Really?
Yeah. So it's got to have been connected. Uh-huh. Do you know what I mean? Removing myself from that situation made me physically feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Off the back of that, last year I got an agent and I started to work a little bit more in other areas that I hadn't done before. And I've had a pretty decent year this year. It's been all right. And I felt pretty good about myself.
The pinnacle of which... Mm-hmm. is doing a podcast called Mind Cake.
Yeah, this
really is the
icing on the
mind proverbial cake. Mind cake.
Yeah, it's been a really good year, and you know, like we produced and performed the third play. Oh, this is the third play that we have done as a theatre company. Mm-hmm. We put on this year. It's the first one that I wrote by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, I've had lots of little milestones.
And
like
lots
that.
Of cracking reviews.
Lots of cracking reviews, yeah. So, you know, for all the bad times and the down times, there's been a lot of highs this year as well.
But can you tell, so obviously because you've had your highs before,
mm-hmm.
can you pinpoint anything? So say you wake up tomorrow morning and you feel low again. Is there anything that you can then, when it's happened in the past, you can pinpoint and go, oh, well, it might be something to do
with that? Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that you can... You know, for example, if I haven't worked for a month and got bills coming out and that's going to clean the bank account out, you're like, I've got enough money to cover my bills, but I don't know where the following month is going to come from. And that sort of, that's worry in the back of your head can lead to stuff like that, you know. Just worrying about everyday nonsense can trigger it. I mean, you know, because I got divorced, well, separated from my wife, and then eventually got divorced, but that was, you know, going on 13 years or something now, 14
oh, really?
Years. Yeah, we've been separated for a long time, and divorced for a little bit less than that. But I don't think I dealt with that particularly well. But at the time, I mean, I didn't deal with it at all at the time, if I'm completely honest. I just basically threw myself into work and looking after my daughter, and I never really processed that. At the time, I just didn't process it or deal with it, I don't think. But, you know, I've had a few girlfriends, but so I had a 10-year period, pretty much, where, or maybe not quite, an 8-year period, where I stumbled from one doomed thing to the next, but never processed or dealt with any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to that stage where I was falsely accused of assaulting a pupil, I think that was just... Whatever it is in my mind that was just holding all of that in.
Yeah.
It was just like, this is just one thing too
this
much.
Is, yeah.
And it just broke the dam or the camel's back or whatever, however you want to sort of put it. Over the last few years, I've done a lot of self-reflection. I've not been very proactive in going to counselling and things like that. I've just kind of always dealt with things my own way. This is why I signed up for the half marathon when I got signed off, because I was like, I've paid my money, I'm going to do it. Now, the reason that I didn't do it...
Oh, you didn't do it?
Well, I did. I did and I didn't. So I ended up doing Shark in the Park, like I've already said.
Yes.
So I ended up being way
down...
How
many times have you plugged that now?
Just once or twice. Okay. But anyway, so I ended up being... I can't even remember where it was. We're staying in a Travelodge down in... It was like Milton Keynes or somewhere, right?
What?
Because I was on tour.
Oh, right. So, where is the half marathon?
Edinburgh.
Right.
So I ended up being away for work. So I couldn't be in Edinburgh to run the half marathon.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd done all my training.
Yep.
So that Sunday, we happened to have a day off. So I went out and I ran 13.1 miles
around
industrial estate.
Milton Keynes.
Wherever, somewhere like that. But I did. So I got a sense of achievement. Now, I didn't get a medal.
Or a t-shirt
or whatever. But I actually followed through and I ran that
followed
half
through?
Yeah, well, it was awfully hot and I'd been running for so long.
We
I didn't have enough water.
So you did a half marathon.
But I did.
So
I
have
did
you ever officially
marathon.
Done a half, an official half marathon?
No, I've done a couple of official 10Ks. I did the Movember 2019 10k thing round Arthur's Seat. I've done that twice.
Right.
I've done another one as well, did a 10k somewhere. But that's my official limit. Unofficially, I have done a half marathon. Anyway, regardless, I did go out and do it. So I did get that sense.
Well, you got your word for that.
Yeah, well, you do.
Yeah. But you had that sense of achievement. You trained for your half marathon and you did it.
Yeah. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to keep up with this, but like, you know, you never do, or I never do. Now, me and you have also, going off on a wee tangent here, we've done the Maggie's stuff.
We did.
Stuff.
Maggie's do this thing called, was it Run 50?
Something like that.
Something like that. So you basically run 50 miles in January. And for some reason, it was particularly icy that year as well.
It was, man. It was brutal.
It was like skating 50.
Yeah, it was. But what was good about it is because obviously we were doing it for charity. So yeah. We each had quite substantial sponsorship. You had thousands and thousands, mm-hmm. didn't you? You had a huge amount of money. Yeah. And I smashed my little target by a couple of £100 as well. So I had a nice little amount there.
Mm.
But when you're putting your running gear on and it's dark outside and it's Baltic and all you want to do is just not go out,
mm-hmm.
you go, but
yeah.
people
and
are...
you're going to tell people, yeah, I just couldn't be bothered yeah. today. And thanks, then, thanks for your sponsorship, but...
And it's that guilt as well. It's like, think about all the people who this money is going to help. Oh, you're
hello.
I know. Do you know what I mean? It's like you're worried about just going out and getting a little bit cold for 20
yeah, yeah.
minutes or half an hour.
Yeah.
It's like you're not having to live with that. Well, you are.
I was.
You were. You was.
Yeah.
You is.
I is, was.
But yeah, and that gets you out the door, though. Mm. You're like, I don't want to let all my sponsors down because, you know, they're giving me hard-earned cash off the back of COVID as well. Money's tight.
For those of people who don't know you and don't follow you on Facebook, do you want to talk through your run route at all?
Oh, yeah.
So it's because there's a name for it, isn't there? For people who do that, who draw pictures.
Is there?
Yeah, it's a thing.
All right. I didn't know there was like an actual name for it.
There's a name for it. So if you go for like a run route on Garmin or on Strava or whatever, and you run a particular route
and it draws
that
a
makes
shape.
A picture uh-huh. or draws a shape or whatever, then that's
what I am.
That's what you did.
No, but it was completely by accident. So
was
I,
it?
Well, yeah. Initially, it was. So I. Where I live, there was a nice... Basically, I found a route where you can run out of the house and run a loop, and it's more or less 5K from leaving and running round back to the house. So I did that. And when I looked at the map,
mm-hmm.
it looked like a phallus.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a long shaft... with a round end.
I think we know what a phallus is.
Well, yeah, yeah. But I'm just, you know, painting a picture. So I thought, oh, that's quite funny. Do you know what? Because obviously people are, you know, I'm raising money and people, you know, we're putting our progress online and stuff to sort of prove that we're doing our miles. I thought this will give people a little giggle.
Mm.
I was like, I wonder if I could draw
cut the balls.
Like the balls or like, you know, the base of the helmet and the urethra.
We're going into a different territory here.
Yeah. So now it just so happens that at the end of the phallus on this route, there's a little lane, right, right at the tip that you can run down, right? And then that hits a little T junction which goes from one side of the road to the other. So I could draw the perfect graffiti cock.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I was like, that's obviously
that's
meant
just,
to be.
Uh-huh.
So then I did that. And
every day?
More or less every day, yeah. So, because I would run the same route.
Yeah, I know.
Sometimes I would run the opposite way around,
but yeah.
the picture
but
at
the
end is
still
always
the same.
Yeah. But yeah, so if you follow me on Instagram and stuff, you've probably seen that. If you don't, I'm not sure if any of them are still on there. And actually, when I went back to teaching for a year... My school was in competition with another school about getting, you know, who could do the most miles in a month. So I joined Strava.
We didn't post them on...
But historically...
Oh, no.
So... Because I started using... instead of my RunKeeper, I started to use Strava because that's what the school were using and didn't really think that everybody in the school
could then see my phallic
pictures. Mm. So I had to delete them all. So I can't remember if... I deleted them all from the socials, or if
well, they're if all not, still there. Can maybe I'm sure there'll be an episode where you can recreate, for the purposes of the podcast, you can recreate your run route.
Yes,
and we can post it, and you can.
I'll
give it a mark. Absolutely. Or if anybody else has got any pictures that they've drawn.
Yeah, that would be good, actually.
With run routes.
We can see. I mean, it doesn't have to be rude.
This is like...
You don't have to be a beast like this. I prefer
if it wasn't boobies or...
Any sort of smiley faces or, you know, a vase of flowers.
This is like our version of Tony Hart's gallery.
Yeah.
We could do that.
Maybe if people are out there exercising, you know, walking or running, if it's raising money or just for boosting your own mental health. And if you haven't drawn a picture, give it a shot.
How about that, Paul? What was that like to listen back to after? Because I think we recorded that in November, October?
Yeah, it must have been
October,
I think it was. Yeah, so it's funny listening back to it now. Obviously, I know everything that's happened because it was me.
Do you think your teaching days are over?
I would say so, yes. Mm. Yes. Like I said in the story there, when I sort of initially left teaching, I thought that was it. But then I went back for almost a year and did it again. But it wasn't a healthy experience. And by the end, obviously, I was in quite a bad place and I wasn't having the best time. So I think now I've done it twice. Going back and doing it a third time would just be insane. Do you know?
Would it be fair to say that you're like the Ronnie O'Sullivan of teaching?
What, like just keep coming back? And
you just keep coming back. You don't really... Oh, I've got sort of a strange relationship with the teaching, but something in you wants to do the teaching, but you don't really like the teaching.
Yeah. A lot of the time, working with the young people in the classroom was the best part of the job. And I know that might sound obvious, but getting to be creative in the classroom with these brilliant young people did bring me a lot of joy. All the other stuff around it that gets to you, the paperwork and the amount of hours you have to put in outside of the classroom and policy and red tape, all that kind of stuff gets in the way of you doing your job. And there's so many brilliant teachers out there that are, you know, constricted because of all the nonsense going on around them. There's so many brilliant teachers that can't just
teach,
flourish in the classroom because there's all this other nonsense going on in the background. It has to be like that. And I think like some of the best teachers out there can manage all that other stuff as well as still delivering really engaging lessons and being a good role model for young people and stuff like that. But me personally, stuff like that was too much for me to cope with. And that's the sad thing about it, because I did really enjoy it and I enjoyed it for a long time. And having to admit to yourself, sort of admit defeat and just go, nah, this isn't working anymore, or I can't cope with that anymore. That's a hard thing to admit and it's a hard thing to come to terms with. But now I'm doing lots of other cool stuff. So I'm feeling much more fulfilled in my life. So I'm in a much better place.
You've developed into a rug deliverer. I mean,
I have. I've climbed the ladder, haven't I?
You've climbed the ladder, now delivering very, very expensive rugs to people who've got dirty rugs.
As well as being an award-winning actor and playwright, but, you know.
Yeah. I just wanted to focus on the rug bit. I would love a rug, actually. Actually, harping back to the last episode when my 3-year-old, now 4-year-old daughter called me Baldy, I would love an expensive rug.
I know a guy.
Just admiring your hair there. You've had it cut, but it still looks massive bouffant.
I might save some of the hairy badge stuff.
I was going to update. I'm going to write that down. Right, for the next episode, I'm going to make a prototype.
A prototype hairy badge?
Yeah.
We didn't get many bites on our poll, did we, about the hairy badge?
I haven't checked the results, but I think I was the only one who voted, and I said, yes, please.
Some people were obviously too disturbed to even say no to that. They just
There are links on our link tree if you've been affected by anything that you heard in the last episode about Paul's hairy badge. Then there are free phone numbers that you can ring. Again, we're not here to offer advice, but other people, if we have affected your mental health, then there are people you can reach out to.
Yeah, we don't offer advice, just hairy badges.
Mm-hmm. Can I add something on IcePodGate?
Oh, yes. What's happening?
I got my refund.
Fabulous.
kind of in full.
Minus an admin fee or something.
No, no, no. Minus the £12 or £13 it cost me to send them the thing back. But now it's back. So I have got another ice bath that's, I guess, cost me £12. Yeah, they refused delivery. So it got back to me. And then they said they were going to give me a refund. And I thought, well, that's never going to happen on the basis of what's happened previously. I have got the full refund for the mats and the ice. I'm on repeat here. The mats and the ice cube thing tray and the thing and the £15 protection or stupid insurance thing I had to pay as well. So I've got the whole 140 odd quid back. It's just the £12 it cost me to send it to them for them to refuse delivery for it to come back again. Yeah, if someone in the local area is prepared to pay me £12 for an ice bath, they are more than welcome to come and get it. Or actually, leading on to that, somebody from Mindcake, I don't want to name names. Somebody from Mindcake put out a poll on Facebook about whether we should actually walk the walk. It suggested that you, Mr. Paul Beeson,
hello,
tried out some cold water therapy.
Yes, I wasn't pleased with the outcome of this poll, I've got to be honest.
It was quite convincing in one direction.
Yeah, I think I was the only person who said no.
Yeah, and there were quite a few people. I think in terms of social media engagement, I would suggest that people wanting you to dunk yourself in ice cold water was possibly the most interactions we've had.
Yeah, ever.
Resounding, yes, please. We'd love to see Paul in his trunks.
You really don't want to see that.
We do. No, the evidence is on the contrary.
No, I think, okay. So people want to see me take an ice bath or a dip in the ocean or something, right? So it will happen.
Well, I might have a surprise lined up.
Oh, jeez. Right. Okay.
So bear with me. I'm working on something at the moment. That is in the future. In the near future, you will take the plunge.
Yes. I mean, I do live by the sea, so there's not really any excuse.
Is it the sea?
Forth River.
Forth or Firth.
Forth is like literally about a 2-minute walk from my front door. But a lot of the beaches around where I live were radioactive at one point, so I'm not sure how safe it is.
Oh, there's something me and the beaches have got in common. I was radioactive for a while as well.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. If you don't want to go in the water, I've got an ice bath I could give you for 12 quid.
I've got a bath in the house that I could just fill with cold water. Do you know what I mean? However, I could go down the road to Aberdour. I could go in the water there.
I mean, I don't want to dish your bathroom, but I would think that Aberdour would be slightly more cinematic. The people just don't want to hear it. They want to see it, Paul. They want to see you wade in or plunge in or whatever we're going to do into the water. And they don't just want to hear your voice go up 10 octaves.
They want to see
when the cold water laps the undersize of your
chin. All right, everybody, I'll do it.
That's that. Good. If they are.
It's on record.
Other things that happened. I went to Disney.
Yeah, I'm yet to hear about this. I've seen the pictures. You met a stormtrooper, I saw.
I did meet a stormtrooper. I was very happy about that. So yes, when I was diagnosed, one of the many things that I was upset about, but the most upset that I wasn't going to take the kids to Disney. One, because we were in lockdown, and two, time was pressing. Not being able to take the kids to Disney was heartbreaking. So for my 50th, my wife treated us all to go to Disneyland Paris for 3 nights.
Formerly known as Euro Disney.
Has it officially changed its name?
Yeah, when it first opened, it was Euro Disney. Now it's Disneyland Paris.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I picked up on that.
There you go.
I did point out when I was walking around thinking, because we stayed in one of the Disneyland hotels, which again, we wouldn't normally do if it was just me and Gemma. You can hire a car or catch a bus or...
You stayed on campus, as it were.
Yeah, we're a short hop, skip and a jump to the park itself. I did point out that, and I know this is wholly inappropriate, that if she'd been quicker off the mark with sort of Make-A-Wish Foundation, we could have got all that for free. It's a bit late now, isn't it? 3.5 years later.
She needs to work on her timing, doesn't she?
Yeah, Gemma did make the comment that she couldn't understand why. I mean, it was brilliant. It was utterly, I should say this, I'm not putting it down on this, it was utterly brilliant just to see the pure joy on the kids' faces. But Gemma did make the comment that she didn't understand why we were so tired. The pair of us have been to Orlando before and done trips that were three times as long, and you're dealing with the heat, and it wasn't nearly as exhausting. We're still doing 16,000 to 20,000 steps a day.
Oh.
And from the minute you get up in the morning, it's for, so yes, in Orlando, when it's just the two of us, you fancy a leisurely breakfast, or you might just fancy a leisurely cup of coffee, or maybe just a chat for half an hour, 40 minutes while you're in the queue for whatever it is. Whereas now when you're in the queue, don't swing on the barriers. No, right. Aaron wants to go on your shoulders. Izzy needs a wee. Aaron wants a snack. Izzy wants to be swung, you know, between you. And it's just full on from the moment you get up at whatever time in the morning to eventually they crash out at 10 o'clock. I've done triathlons that were less exhausting than 3 days in Euro Disney with a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. But that said, it was amazeballs.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm glad you had a good time.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant. But f*** me. Jesus. It was it was full on.
How is how are the crystals working out for sleepy time?
Yeah, I think Kay must have sent me the wrong ones.
Yeah, they're more energetic, if anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's really affecting. I can still hear her. It's now 9 o'clock on a Friday night, and I can still hear her chuntering away upstairs. But we've kind of got to the stage now where we're kind of just letting her get on with it rather than trying to fight it, because it just ends up in screaming and shouting, and it's all very unpleasant for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of going, right, okay, if you just want to play in your room, that's fine. And when you're ready to go to sleep, because otherwise it's just, you know, trying to force her to go to bed. How do you force a kid to go to bed? 4-year-old kid, you know?
I don't know either. Well, when Daisy was that age, that's my daughter, she was actually quite good about just kind of getting into bed and having a story, and she quite liked her sleep, so quite lucky in that respect. Yeah, she slept pretty well.
I think if we could shift it back an hour and a half, so she's up an hour and a half, because you can't, that's the trouble, you can't get up in the morning. She cannot switch off, and she will fight it. You know, you could see her eyes are like rolling in the back of the head. She's like, I'm not tired. She will fight it down to her kind of last breath until she eventually conks out and will go to sleep. But it's fucking torture at the moment. I was dreading it for Disney. So I was thinking, because we've been in a travel lodge before and she's just screaming and you're all in the room together and it's nowhere to go. And so I was kind of worried that Disney was going to be, so we do all the things that we would normally do and go, do you know what? Just lie there, stick Disney on the telly like a cartoon was in French. And she eventually would conk out about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And then we do it all again the next day. But anyway, can I do a 175-year shout-out?
Yeah, of course.
I'm going to show you this on the camera.
The Royal Humane Society Bronze Medal for Edmund Crompton, 16th of June, 1850. Ooh, do explain.
This is the medal of my great-great-granddad who won, well, as it says on the box, the Royal Humane Society's Bronze Medal for Bravery.
Wow.
So I contacted the Royal Humane Society because I had a newspaper article saying my great-great-granddad or whatever was a waterman on the River Wye near Hereford. I've got the newspaper cutting here. The death of a Hereford worthy. He saved a total of 17 lives from drowning in the River Wye.
Wow.
Besides that, he recovered no fewer than 14 dead bodies from drowning in the river, one of which was his wife.
Oh, my God.
So one of the people he didn't manage to save was his wife. He was a very modest man, and I think they had a sort of whip round, if you like, the more affluent members. And when he was not very well in his latter years, they paid for him to stay in one of these like hospices because he was a bit of a sort of local celebrity. Well, here we are. This is, so it says here, our obituary this week contains an announcement of the death at the age of 78 of an old Hereford celebrity, in that the person of Edmund Crompton, a waterman who was well known in years gone by. Extraordinary man. So anyway, it mentions in this article that he won the, or was awarded rather, it's a one, it's not like a raffle.
Yeah.
He was awarded the medal. And so I wondered whether they still did the medals. And did the Royal Humane Society still do award bravery medals? So I contacted them and said, listen, I think my great-great-granddad might have won this in around 1850.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've done the research and they've sent me a copy of the actual certificate and the entry of who he saved and where. Yeah, which I just think is
inspirational.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine there's anything other than obviously this podcast that I'll that will survive that I've done that will survive 175 years. And I think it's quite nice that if he'd have known that one of his ancestors would, in 175 years' time, have that medal. So that's Edmund Crompton for you.
Yeah, here's to Edmund Crompton.
Here's to Edmund Crompton. Other people of note who have won the Royal Humane Society medal.
What?
Bram Stoker.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
Vampire Hunter.
Apparently, I might have this wrong, but I think he dived or dove, I don't know, off the back of a paddle steamer into the river. Was it the River Thames? But anyway, he dived into the river and saved someone from drowning, along with, not at the same time, not I mean along with, they didn't do it in partnership, Duncan Goodhue.
I was going to say, Bram Stoker would have been quite old at the time, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Him and Duncan Goodhue. Duncan,
come on, Bram. In you come. But yeah, obviously Duncan Goodhue, presumably that was a drowning thing as well, a water thing, had the distinct advantage of being an Olympic swimmer.
Yeah, aerodynamic, wasn't he, Duncan
Yeah,
Goodhue?
He was. Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with being bold. No. So yeah, he that's cheating a little bit, Duncan, because you don't think Bram Stoker would swam for the nation, did he?
Not as far as I know.
Or my great-great-grandfather.
Illustrious company indeed.
Duncan Goodhue and Bram Stoker.
Yeah, well...
And Edmund Crompton.
Yeah, it's more illustrious company and medals than I've got. So chop
that's
that
true.
Up as a win for Edmund, I think.
Well done, Edmund.
Yeah, well done, Edmund.
Emails.
We have had a flurry of emails from our old pal Ian McNabb. He sent 4 emails this week.
Has he really?
Yeah.
I haven't logged on.
I don't have. obviously, we don't have time to go through them all right now.
Do you think he's trying to get his own segment on the show?
Yeah. Ian McNabb's email corner.
Do you know what? This is news to me. I apologise, Ian. I have clearly, because we're not used to getting emails, I don't generally check.
I only checked just before we came on air, so to speak. I was always sent 4 emails, bless him.
Right, Ian, I will read those and respond before the next episode.
Yeah, so I think maybe in the next episode we'll have Ian McNabb's email corner, where we can address all of the emails. But you know what would be nice is if we had like another few corners of other people's emails.
Another listener.
Yeah. Sort of make up a square, perhaps. So, you know, could have 4 corners.
Well, we had Sarah Dean.
Yeah. So, well, that's something to think about in the future.
Mm.
And we had my pal Alan. Remember?
Yeah, we did.
From Australia. Yeah, yeah. So we have had a few. We have had a few.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't know whether I'm coming or going.
Rugs and acting.
Yeah. Oh my. What a combination. But
I think I mentioned that I mentioned in a previous episode that we're talking about, I think it was Dr. Jan's revolution
mm-hmm.
episode
mm-hmm.
that we should reframe New Year's resolutions so that they are more interesting and that you're more likely to keep to. And one of the things they suggested was come up with 2 more ideas for screenplays.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Which I have done, which I won't bore you with the details. I've done that privately. But your rug stories and rug man have inspired a character in one of my dark comedies.
Oh, there you go. I am your muse.
He's a germaphobe. I like the idea of a germaphobe who has the job handling dirty rugs. When I put it like that, it sounds like a really boring story. Actually, I might not bother.
But you do need some interesting characters doing that this kind of work, because
I bet you do.
You end up in some very affluent areas, some very isolated farmhouses and mansions and things, you know. A whole range of different people. It's like any customer-facing kind of job. You encounter lots of different people, but doing this, because a lot of them have, you know, a fair bit of money and stuff, like some of them are quite eccentric, and yeah, it's really interesting, actually.
I wonder how long it is till you find a dead body wrapped up in a rug. Well, it's just my mind. I should maybe go to the doctors. My mind's, I don't think my brain works properly like other people's brains. It was like driving along the motorway. I remember when I was a trainee surveyor and you used to have to get a lift with one of the like head commercial guys to Basingstoke Right, and you're there trying to make a good impression because I'm the idiot trainee, right? And you know what I said as we're driving along the M3 to Basingstoke, I say, as we're going under, like, the concrete bridges and that go over the motorway, and I say, have you ever wondered, like, how many dead bodies there must be encapsulated in the concrete of the bridges that
Jesus.
circumnavigate the country? And he kind of just looked at me and went, no. And then we just sat in silence. Even as I'm saying it, I'm like, what are you doing?
That's the mind of a writer. You're looking for the drama and the inciting incident in every situation. Or maybe
Well,
you're
because it's
just
good.
sick.
Well, there's that. I mean, maybe my quantity surveying career would have gone a lot better if I'd spent more time quantity surveying and less time thinking about dead people in concrete bridges.
Yeah.
Is that not what they used to do, though?
Well, apparently so. Like you hear these stories about, gangs and like mafia stuff, like they were all connected with construction and all that kind of stuff. So if something was being built or filled with concrete, it was a good
Because who would ever know? You're never going to break up the bridge across the M3, are you, to
exactly.
check whether there's
That's
any dead bodies in it?
you put a corpse in a flyover, you're never finding that.
No. I'm going to call the character Paul. So
Oh,
that when
thank
you
you.
heard it here first, whenever you if you ever see, it's unlikely, but if you ever see anything on the television where there is a character called Paul who is a germaphobe who delivers rugs, then this is you heard it here
You
first.
heard it here first.
And at the end of no, actually, do you know what? I can't say that just in case it does get the telly, and then people know what happens because I know the inciting incident at the end of series one that is then the hook for series two. And the other thing I learned as well, you probably know this as an actor, some people say seasons and some people say series. Apparently, I only found this out today. So as the series is the whole entire thing. So one series could be
10
five
seasons.
seasons.
Oh,
Yes,
yeah.
yeah. So like the last episode of the very last episode would be the series and season finale.
Got you.
So the series apparently is the overriding arc. The reason I know that is because I've been listening to other podcasts other than our own.
Been cheating on Mindcake with other
Now,
podcasts.
yeah, I have to recommend it. Now, I think it's called That's Entertainment with Richard Osman. It's very good.
Oh, that young upstart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. He's
Anyway.
quite good. I quite like him. He's all right. Shark in the Park's coming back in April.
Hey.
Hey. So I'm doing a couple of weeks on Shark in the Park, the first 2 weeks of
Where,
April.
right, where is that? Because I think the kids would like that. It's just like when you have like somebody on, you're going to give the I mean Crawley on the 2nd of June.
Yeah. I think we're only doing one Scottish date, actually. We're at Cumbernauld Theatre
What's it called?
on Cumbernauld. Were
If you're
you
not
doing a
Scottish,
joke there?
yes, I am. If you're not Scottish, you won't get it.
Yeah,
I
so.
had I said this morning that I was getting off a Partick. I was genuinely getting off a Partick. Again, if you're outside Scotland, that won't mean anything to you.
On my side of the country, it's called getting off at Haymarket.
Is it?
Because you don't go all the way to Waverley.
Oh, it's different.
I'm assuming we're talking about the same thing here,
I
aren't
assume we are talking about the same thing. Yeah. If you get off a
If
Haymarket,
you get off at Haymarket, you're, yeah.
yeah. Okay.
You're not finishing
You're not finishing the whole length.
the
Right. Okay. We've taken a bit of a turn there. Shark in the Park. So Shark
Shark
in
in
the
the
Park
Park.
is Cumbernauld.
And then we go down to Slough, Basingstoke.
Oh, look out for those concrete bridges.
I will do. Bristol, Lancaster, Bridlington Spa. So we're just kind of, that's over the first 2 weeks of April. And some of the places were there more than one day as well. So if you're in any of those areas and you've got little ones, or even if you don't, you just want to come and see a piece of kids' theatre.
Just want to see Paul.
Ooh. Yeah, do come along.
And his
So
massive hair.
yes, I'll be wearing a wig though, so
Oh.
it's even bigger than my actual hair, so
What? That's not possible.
I know.
What date is Cumbernauld?
The 3rd of April.
I'm writing that down underneath the word batch. 3rd of April. Okie dokie.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I'll
that's my
check the
shameless
diary.
pimping of
That's fine.
myself.
No, I would like to see you in action. I've only ever seen you as Mad Rab.
That's right.
So,
Yeah.
in person, anyway. Are you the shark?
No, I am Timothy Pope's dad. So Timothy Pope is the main little boy in the story who's got his telescope and wants to go looking for sharks, and I'm his dad.
Okay.
Yeah. And hilarity ensues.
Oh, I can imagine.
That's a lovely little show. It's a lovely little show. Very proud to be a part of it.
No, very much so. And I think Cumbernauld Theatre is actually quite nice. I think I've been there before.
Yeah, it is
Oh, I don't
nice.
doubt it, Paul. I don't doubt it.
Oh,
Housekeeping?
Paul pieces housekeeping. Oh, how very lovely.
So, you know the drill by now, folks. Get it? Like the drill and the sound effect.
It's not a drill, it's a Hoover.
Sounds like a drill.
It's not, it's a housekeeping, it's a Hoover.
You can send us an email because we love our email. Don't you laugh at me. Don't you laugh at me. Like we've already been saying, we love an email. So send us an email at sliceofmindcake@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at mindcakepodcast. And you can find us on Facebook if you just search for mindcake. Oh, thank you very much.
If you forget the email address, just ask Ian McNabb because he knows it off by heart.
Oh, yeah. He pure loves.
Emails.
He does.
Yeah.
And we very much like him getting in touch.
Yes. We love
But I say
you,
that, I apologize. I haven't actually read his emails, which is
Ian.
bad of me. Beautifully done, as always, Paul.
Thank you.
Do you have rug deliveries to do at the weekend, or is it just a Monday to Friday thing?
I occasionally, but I try not to. I try to keep the weekends free,
For.
relaxing, spending time with my loved ones. But yeah, so I'm not delivering any rugs this weekend. So that's life in the fast lane.
Well, it sounds yeah. So you keep me posted with any shenanigans that I can include in my screenplay as I am living vicariously through you and your rug delivery service. Well, yes. If I don't see you before, I'll see you on the 3rd of April, hopefully.
Yeah, I'll see you virtually before that.
Virtually, very much so. Yes.
Nice
Lots to
one.
look forward to in the coming episodes.
Yes. We have some very exciting guests coming up too, don't we, Lee?
Yes, we do, Paul.
So look forward to that.
Yes, thank you so much for listening, as always.
See ya.
Bye.
Let's start a podcast about our